Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Doug Llewellyn.
Hi, folks. How are you? Nice to be back with you again. You know, I say that all the time, but I mean it. I really do mean it. I love being here with you, with the fascinating guests we have, because we talk to people from all walks of life. We talk to doctors. We talk to musicians. We talk to business executives. And today, we're going to talk to an author. I love talking to authors because sometimes, you know, you don't really get a chance to hear a lot from people who write books and tell us about their experiences and what it's like to write a book. I must tell you something. The lady you're going to be hearing today has had some fascinating experiences and has written books about it. For example, about, 19 years ago, she traveled with her husband to the North Slope of Alaska, to a remote village with a population of about 300 people, and she and her husband lived among these natives and oil construction workers for nearly 2 years on the North Slope of Alaska. It was a totally different experience for her. As she says, it's a place where Mother Nature rules with an iron fist, where the temperature sometimes dropped to 80 below zero and the wind was gusting to 70 miles an hour. Now, put yourself in that situation. You know she has some fabulous stories to come up with. Well, she did. She came back home and eventually became a writer of books. Very, very good books, very highly rated books, and books that you may not know anything about. So we're going to talk to her. Her name is Kimberly R. Morgan. I used the middle initial for a very specific reason. Otherwise, I'd say Kimberly Morgan. But her website is Kimberly R. Morgan. So if you want to learn more about her afterwards, maybe you'll remember if I use that middle initial, Kimberly R. Morgan. Kimberly is her name. She is a resident of Tupelo, Mississippi. And you know what she has that not a lot of people have? Well, not a lot of people do. She has a marvelous, magnetic Southern accent. So, Kimberly, welcome. Nice to have you with us today. How are you?
Thank you, Doug. That's a very nice compliment. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Now, Kimberly's on a cell phone, and the signal is kind of fading a little bit. So, Kimberly, if I tell you it's fading, I don't know what you can do. What can one do?
I will try to move. Okay.
We'll keep our fingers crossed. To give you an idea, folks, she is the author of the international best-selling book, the popular Capo's. Am I pronouncing it right? Capo or Capo? It's Capo, isn't it?
Capo's
Prayer. Yeah, like a cap on your head. All right. Capo's Prayer series, which Capo's Prayer, and then the follow-up book was called Capo's Prayer Revelations. Now, those books delve into the emotional side of those folks, the mafia, their families, their children, and the destiny they were born into and how they handle it. As Kimberly has written, it's graphic and it's violent, as most of her work is. You know, Kimberly, looking at your picture on your website, I can't believe you write this kind of stuff. You don't look like a like a mean woman that would write this kind of stuff. This is pretty graphic, is right. Well, as it says here, to look at Morgan, you wouldn't think she was the imagination behind a lot of the violence and adult content found in her stories. The juxtaposition between you and what you write, it takes people back. They're surprised when they see you, aren't they? Are you there, Kimberly? Oh, my goodness. I told you her signal was fading, and it has apparently faded right out. Now, you know, folks, for those of you who don't know what a radio studio is like, I'm looking at Kimberly's telephone line on my control board, and it's lit up. It indicates that she's connected. But that, all right, now she just dialed back in again, so let's see if she's here, okay? I hear you now. Yeah. Can you hear me now? Yep, I hear you now. Okay, very good. As I was pointing out, I just started to mention the fact that people wouldn't think you were the one behind some of all the violence and adult content you write in your stories. the juxtaposition between what you are and what you write, it takes people back a lot, right? They look at you and they don't believe it. Is that right?
Yes, I'm pretty much underestimated most of the time.
Well, let's talk about your background and how you got into writing books. Did you ever think you'd become a writer? Did you have aspirations to write or not?
No, I did write for the school newspaper, and I enjoyed it, but I actually wanted to be a psychiatrist. I had no desire to be a writer.
So how did it happen? How did you become a writer?
You know, while living on the North Slope, I had a lot of free time on my hands, and my husband just kept saying, you know, you've got talent. You need to write. He said, I don't care if you ever have anything published, just write. So I began to write and put the story together, and I found that actually I did like writing. And when the first book came out and I tapped into Amazon and I saw my book cover up, I was hooked. It was a very emotional experience to see, you know, my first work up on the screen.
I can imagine that. By the way, the book was called Sins of the Midnight Suns. Now, when you went to the north coast of Alaska, how old? You were young at that point, right? I mean, relatively newly married?
Yes, pretty young, and had not traveled a lot. My late husband, he had worked up in Alaska on the Alaska Trans-Alaskan Pipeline years before I even, you know, met him. So he was very used to the people, the climate. For me, it was culture shock. I've never experienced any the weather and the people. It's just hard to imagine. I think most people think of Alaska, as you see the postcards, the aurora borealis, you know, the beautiful snow and the bears. And I'm telling you, there's another world above that Arctic Circle that is totally undiscovered.
Well, here for a young lady from Mississippi, are you Tupelo? Did you grow up in the Tupelo area?
Yes, just outside of Tupelo, went to school. We're K-12. We all were brought up together, very small area.
Well, I was just going to point out, though, that absolutely culture shock is right when you leave Tupelo and go to the North Slope of Alaska, where it goes down to 80 below zero. Not only culture shock, I mean... You must have been freezing most of the time. I can't take cold weather. I don't know if you can, but boy, I couldn't handle that. I don't think.
But you definitely, you have to buy the clothes. You know, my coat was made for 30 below, and even your shoes. Even though I wasn't out that much, just walking from the house to the truck to go up to camp to eat dinner or lunch was about the only time I was out. But it's severe. The men that work in that climate, they work 20 minutes out, then they rotate out, and another shift comes in, works 20 minutes, and they just rotate because it's very harsh climate. And it's very serious to deal with it. I can remember waking up in the morning and my Dawn dishwash detergent would be under my sink, and it would be the consistency of like a slush puppy. It would be frozen.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, tell me, what kind of, I mean, your husband was telling you, you're up there, you got time, you got to write, you've got talent. What did you come up with? What is the story, The Sins of the Midnight Suns, about?
You know, I would sit in the mess hall, especially at night, and all the men would come in. The mess hall is kind of reminds me of a school lunchroom. And you're all sitting at these long tables, and there's about 100, 150 men, and there are very few women. Most of the women are work in the kitchen. A few of the school teachers would be in the mess hall. But I would listen to the stories these men would tell about their lives that they had lived all these years working on the North Slope in the oil and gas industry. And they were very colorful stories. And once I was there long enough, I just became one of them. So they got where they would freely talk to me or just talk around me. And I noticed they seemed to have two different lives. They had the life they had back in the lower 48 with their wife and their children and family. And then when they cross over above that Arctic Circle, I call it an adult playground. They became someone else just to survive in that environment, which was very colorful. I know a lot of things they did there they would never attempt back home. So I wrote a tell-all book on their life, the double life they lived between the lower 48 and the North Slope of Alaska.
Interesting. I'm impressed that you went. I mean, I would assume most of those men or many of the men were married, but when they went up there to work, they didn't take their wives or their families with them, right?
The wives were not allowed. I know that's, but luckily I was. My husband was in the management position, and so we got to rent a home there in town. The company rented us a home. But wives were not allowed for whatever reason. I don't know. But one reason, the men live in what they call a man camp. There's no room for wives, children. It's like army barracks. So there's no room for family.
Well, you just explained. I was going to ask you how come you went when most of the other men did not have their wives there.
Lucky me.
But well, if that's what the way you look at it, 80 below zero, and you're up there. do you ever wish you were home in 2 below instead of up there, while all that bad weather was going on?
I won't deny that I cried a few tears occasionally. I was homesick, and but I would always tell Steve, I'd say, "Sweetheart, if you ever doubt my love for you, never ever forget these 2 years that I spent with you up here, because it." But naturally, no regrets. It was a once in a lifetime experience in so many ways, and it was quite an adventure, and I wouldn't trade it now for anything. No matter daily, it was very hard.
Well, as you have written, your first book, Sins of the Midnight Suns, takes place up there on the North Slope of Alaska in that remote village of about 300 people. It's 80% nonfiction. In other words, it's mostly real. When you finish the book, tell me now, because there are a lot of people who have aspirations to write a book, and they think, oh, God, I could write a book. But the big problem is getting it out, getting it published. How did you go about getting it out? Did you publish it yourself? Did somebody come along and say, this is good, I want to publish it? What steps did you take to get the book on the market?
Well, Jim and I discussed it just a little bit last week. I had a very reputable agency in New York want to publish the book, but they wanted to do real names, real company, and I declined that. So I was released from my contract. And so I self-published, and through self-publishing, you've got all the control. So, through social media, you advertise locally in your bookstores. So that was my avenue as far as getting the book out. Of course, Amazon is great, is a great way to, get your work out.
The big question, how did you get the contact in New York that originally was interested in getting you, to write the book for them? How did that happen for you? Because a lot of people can't get that. They can't make the connection,
Well, what happened, I did my research as I started writing Sins of Midnight Suns, and I read where it said literary agencies prefer 5 to 10 chapters. Don't send the whole manuscript. They don't want to read it. They can tell, if they want to sign you from the first few chapters. So that's what I did. I sent out probably 100+ manuscripts. And
wow.
So I got a reputable agency, in New York that called one morning and said, we love this. And we actually started editing, working on it. And the more we delved, got into the people and everything that was going on, they saw such an and this literary agency, they love to do autobiographies and biographies. They like everything very real, real named, and that was kind of their forte. So when I declined, they were gracious. So was I. I understood what they wanted. They understood I could not do what they had asked. And so, I was released from the contract. And then I started, looking at self-publishing. And the cover that is on the book, Sins of Midnight Suns, for everybody's information, that is a real picture. That those men, that was taken in 1991, and someone just snapped a photograph, and I found through a connection of BP Oil who the picture belonged to, and I gave him credit on the back of the book. And it was some geologist and all from Canada, and that is an actual picture. Nothing has been retouched. That is the photograph.
It's a beautiful picture, by the way. It really is.
Yes.
Great picture. It's almost like, is that dawn or is that sunset?
I believe that will be dawn on that one.
Really? The crack of dawn? Okay.
Yes. You know, we go through that 6 months of dark and then 6 months of daylight.
I'd forgotten about that.
As an experience.
Yeah, 6 months of darkness with no sun? Whoa, that is totally different. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so your first book went out, and it's how about the reviews? Were they did the book get reviewed when you do it? Self-publish it yourself?
Yes, I had several reviews written by people who read the book, and that's your best thing. You know, the best way to pay an author is just write a review for them. That helps tremendously. The public, the people who work in Alaska, some were happy with the book, some was not. A few of the men approached my husband and told him not to let me write any more books.
Yeah, okay. All right.
The funniest thing that it was ever said is one of the men said, not only can I not vacation, I mean, only I can't work in Alaska, I can't even vacation there now after your book.
Oh my gosh. They want you to stay out. That's bad, because I understand you're going to focus your sights on Hollywood next, right? That might be terrible.
Yes, I am.
Listen.
Yes.
I know you were on this show last week with Jim Masters. You forgot to thank Fred Eckhart, and you wanted to make up for that. So talk about him now.
Yes, Fred. Fred Eckhart, he wrote all the poetry that's in both books. It's very intense, very dark, and we label it as mafia poetry. Each poem represents what's beginning in each chapter. He did a remarkable job. He had a poem titled The Capo's Prayer. And when I read that poem, it signified everything that I was writing about in both books. And from that, we just started this great working relationship. And I would tell him, like tonight, look, Fred, I'm going to be writing XYZ tomorrow. Can you get me a poem? And within hours, I would have something just remarkable. He's so talented. And I tell people he's also my brother-in-law. He's married to my youngest sister, and no one in the family knew he had this talent till the books came out. And so I'm very grateful, because it gives a really nice feel, something different to the material.
Now, I should point out that he's your co-author on Capo's Prayer, and its follow-up, Capo's Prayer Revelations. Now, these are mafia-oriented, is that right? They deal with the mafia?
Yes. Yes, and just so you know, all three families are listening right now.
The point I'm asking is, where did you get the background to come up with books involving the mafia? Did you grow up in the mafia or something? What happened?
No. The very first time, just a little back information, my husband grew up in Chicago for 15 years, so he knew about that world somewhat. But one night back in 2014, in January, we walked into our favorite Italian restaurant in Maryville, Indiana, which is about 45 minutes from Chicago. And he and I sat down at one of the tables next to the bar, and there was five or six men standing there. It's early afternoon, about 4:30. And they've got the long, dark coats on, the fedora hats. Some had on the gray coats. And they were talking in Italian. And I just looked at my husband and I said, wow, this is straight out of Sopranos. Steve leans across the table real discreet. And he said, baby, he said, take it down just a little bit. He said, that is the real deal standing there. And, Doug, I'm telling you, it caught my breath, my attention, because I could reach out and touch them. And I was trying to listen. Of course, I had no clue what they were saying. The manager came out and I talked to them. They didn't pay for any drinks, and they left. And from that moment on, I just became totally mesmerized by this world. And as I began to kind of do research, and naturally I will not give my people who have trusted me to talk to me. But as I found these people, it took a little time, took some time for them to trust me. I found out that there's more to this world than what we see on The Sopranos or even The Godfather. And a lot of people have asked me, you know, how's this book different from The Godfather? And I'm always humbled to even be mentioned in the same sentence as The Godfather. But I think we touch more on the emotional destiny of these men and families, and not just the men. It's their mother, their father, their children, their sisters. It's a very difficult life that I think has been just ignored up until now. And I'm glad they let me into the emotional aspect of their world.
You know, it sounds very, very interesting that you've been able to do that. I'm hooked. I'd like to see the book because I'm sure it's fascinating. But anyway, all of your research then is based on reality, than talking to people who really knew what they were talking about, right? To put it mildly.
Yes. You know, one of them told me, and it just struck. I know people think, you know, how could you have any compassion for mafia? But when one of them told me, he said, I would love to put my destiny in a box and push it as far back in my closet as I could and never open it. But he said, you know, there's always somebody who wants to come and open it, and I have to deal with it. And, you know, these people, once they're born into this life, as I told Jim, there's not really any way out. You just learn to deal with it. And it's something they grew up in, so it's normal to them. And sometimes it's not always just this intense violence. You know, we watch the documentaries and TV shows, but there is so much more to these families than what television and film has brought. There is a heart in these people. They really do have a heart and an emotional side.
Well, those are two books. Capo's Prayer is one of them, obviously, which you wrote, and then the follow-up, Capo's Prayer Revelations. You have other books too. I should point out, you wrote an autobiography about your relationship with your husband, who passed away a couple of years ago. But you called that Widow's Wishes, the Widow's Wishes. Tell me briefly about that, because that's a really intriguing title, The Widow's Wishes. What do you talk about it?
Yeah, the people who got to be a part of mine and Steve's life was always captivated by our marriage. I always said I didn't have a 22-year marriage. I had a 22-year love affair. And when he passed away from heart issues in Maryville, Indiana, in October 2014, my life just stopped. My writing stopped. My world, I just sat every day for months. And I caught myself always saying, I wish, I wish, I wish. And actually my brother-in-law, Fred Heckart, he made a comment. He said, there's your book title, The Widow's Wishes. And in that book, I wrote it just to remember one of the most incredible men that I feel like ever walked this earth. Steve Morgan, if you met him, you left as a better person just for meeting him, whether it be 10 minutes, an hour, or you worked for him. He was just an incredible man. And so, therefore, The Widow's Wishes is a tribute to the best man I've ever known. And I miss him terribly.
Well, I want to point out that the book is described as, it says, grab a box of Kleenex and pour yourself a nice warm cup of Joe, because when you sit down with this one, you'll be thinking about it 2 days later after you finish reading. I'm so glad you did that, and it's a great title. It sounds, your books just sounded great to read. By the way, you're working on one. Your goal is to get a book made into a movie. That's the one thing you really would like to accomplish, right?
That is always my goal when I write a book, is that we go and I write the screenplays. The screenplay is done for Sins of the Midnight Sun. And then the Catholic's Prayer, I'm currently working on those. We're looking at Italian talent. We want to film in Italy and Sicily. We want to go totally authentic with an Italian cast.
Well, you obviously have to have an agent who has connections in Hollywood to make this happen. So have you accomplished that?
I don't have an agent, but I'm doing okay, Doug, on my own.
You are.
Yes, I am.
Okay, I won't ask your secret, but I mean, I'm fairly familiar with a lot of stuff that goes on in Hollywood, having worked there for many, many years. Unless you got a good contact at one of the studios who's willing to open the door, it's a tough thing to get a book made into a movie. So, I don't want you to give your secrets away, but you think you're on the right track, right?
Well, I will tell you one thing that's not a secret, and I flew out to L.A. about a year ago, and I flew first class, and I sat down in the seat, and there was a gentleman that comes sit down next to me, and as you have it, I was in Minneapolis. We had to sit on the tarmac for like 45 minutes, and this gentleman next to me, very well-dressed, nice-looking Asian, but he didn't talk to me, and I just got a feeling maybe he's a doctor. He just gave off that feel, but I didn't bother him. I didn't say anything to him. So finally, we get up in the air and we begin talking. Let me tell you who he was. He's the senior vice president of marketing and distribution for Warner Brothers.
Oh, wow!
Best money I've ever spent for a plane ticket.
What a break.
So he got interested. We exchanged business cards, and he's like, if you ever need me, you know, you call, let me know. So I have a little bit of a connection.
Oh, I would say you do. Okay. Well, you see, that's what I meant. You have to have some sort of a connection if you don't have an agent that can do it for you. But there's a story right there. Well, it's not a book, but it's a great story on how a book may become a movie. So
yes.
That's wonderful. I'm glad you told me that. That's a great aspect of this story. We're talking to Kimberly R. Morgan. Friends call her Kimberly. If you want to check out her website to look at her story and look at the books that she's done and they're available and a little bit more about this Hollywood possibility, go to the website, KimberlyRMorgan.com, and that's where you can get the information. Kimberly, what are you doing right now? You've got these various books that are out. Are you working on other books now? Are you researching something?
Well, actually, I'm an executive producer on the short film, The Riven Destiny, that we filmed last summer. It's in post-production. It's a cross between Avatar, Star Wars, and it's actually got some momentum, even though it's just hadn't come out of post-production yet. So we're pretty excited about that. Rob Frederick is the writer-director. My business partner, Peter Madrigal, from Vanderpump Rules, he's my business partner. That shows on Bravo. He's a producer on it. And so we've got some pretty exciting momentum going on that film. And then, like I said, I'm writing the screenplays for both of the Catholic Prayer series. I've got some investor meetings coming up in San Francisco, possibly in a few weeks. I do have interested partners that want to look at making this into a film. So I'm pretty excited about that.
You should be very excited.
Yeah.
It's been a lot of hard work,
long days, nights. These last two books have been very emotional because it was a world that is very new to me. I had a phone call the other day, and a lady said, you know, first book was great. The second book, Revelation, she said, I went to bed totally emotionally drained. She said, it just...
Kimberly, I hate to interrupt you. We're almost out of time. I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us. Kimberly Morgan, an author with a really good, having really great luck. That's good. Great to hear those stories. Look up her website, everybody, KimberlyRMorgan.com. That's where you'll find out about her books and about what's going on with her. We're going to hear more from her. I can tell you it's going to happen. That's it for this edition of CUTV News Radio. Everybody, Doug Llewellyn. Bye for now. Have a great day, and we hope to see you soon again. Take care. Kimberly?